This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins, and I'm here today on the 28th of October at 6:30 with Henry Viola here at HT Viola on X. And you can find me at Conquer Street on X. Henry, welcome back, mate. We're here. The markets are volatile. Everyone's chomping at the bit in America saying, you know, our companies are better than your companies. And we've now got Apple, Microsoft, and Nvidia, all worth $4 trillion or more officially today. And to counter that, we have, let me just get these numbers right, we have four companies, Henry, not three, but four companies worth more than $100 billion. So $4 trillion versus $100 billion. We've got Unilever at $114 billion, Shell at $163 billion, HSBC at $172 billion, and AstraZeneca at $194 billion. I think Nvidia, when I looked last night, was worth $4.7 trillion. So how many HSBCs, Shells, Unilevers, and AstraZeneca can you fit inside one Nvidia?
It is absolutely astonishing. Yeah. The value of these businesses at this point. And one of the things that I've been watching very, very closely is just the amount of excitement around AI, data centers, chip manufacture. It's like the whole world has gone mad for this stuff. And, you know, if you listen to interviews with Stephen Yu of Blue Whale Capital, he talks about buying Nvidia. I don't know the exact date, but I'm going to say 10 years ago. It might be a bit less, but it's a long time ago.
They've been running for 8 years. I think he bought it about 6 years ago, and he said it was going to be the largest cap company in the US. He nailed it. I think he's 10 or 12 fold on the actual stock, so he's not giving up on it just yet.
So I'm slightly off on my timings there.
Yeah.
But the valuation compared to when he bought it as compared to now, astronomically different.
You know, yes, indeed.
They are leagues and leagues apart. But the whole world is talking about this stuff, almost to the exclusion of all other sectors. So maybe we're all going to become, I don't know, artificial personalities uploaded onto data chips in a data center somewhere. Maybe that's the grand plan.
I sincerely hope not, mate.
It doesn't sound fun, does it?
I sincerely hope not.
I don't really fancy a live-action remake of the Matrix.
No, we don't want to see that. Don't want to see that in the real world, mate. So, yeah, so that's unfortunately what's going on, mate. You know, it keeps going. So the other deal, PayPal and OpenAI signed an agreement for PayPal to be the first digital wallet to neatly integrate ChatGPT. Yeah, so that's going on. So that's PayPal in the mix as well now regarding them all. And then Microsoft has done a deal taking 27% of OpenAI, valuing OpenAI at $135 billion. So they've got a 27% stake until 2032. So it's still going on. That little diagram and what you spoke about several weeks ago now.
It is fascinating, that
just
whole
going
ecosystem.
Around that virtuous circle.
A pot of money that's gone in. So, you know, you and I pay for the premium version of ChatGPT, or Gallagher goes and buys the super premium version for $200 a month. So money's gone into the ecosystem, which is then used to buy Nvidia chips, which are then put in Oracle data centers, which ChatGPT uses to power its program, so that they can then spend more money with Nvidia, and it's going round and round in circles. Now, there's a real parallel with this with other sectors of the global economy in years gone by. You know, I was watching something the other day that was talking about the Japanese economy and how they were all cross-funding each other.
Yeah.
very, very similar model where you got a pot of money that had gone in and it was circulating between a small group of companies that were paying each other the same thing. I mean, think about Enron. Exactly the same thing.
Think about Enron in this circumstance, mate,
Let's
because
not,
it would be cataclysmic for
but this
the
is my
US
point.
market, and it would roll right over to the UK, despite us having nothing to do with it.
It'll
The
roll
UK
out
US
over
market
everything. And I
could
mean,
put.
the parallel for me, you know, you've got a pot of money that's gone into a system, Enron Co. Enron Co. then pays its subsidiary, Enron UK. Enron UK wants to borrow some money in order to, I don't know, invest in something. And so it creates a special purpose vehicle. It buys some property using the money from the US, borrows in the special purpose vehicle against the property that it's just bought. The debt is then held by the special purpose vehicle. Money sort of disappears. The debt can't be seen by the top level entity because it's three rows down. So the global parent never reported it. It's fairly complicated as a structure, but the principle being that you have these corporate entities that have got, it's not just Peter Higgins Co., it's not, you know, Congress 3 Limited or whatever that has just got a balance sheet. It's the thousands of entities underneath that that have gone and borrowed and
And that's
leveraged
the domino,
up.
yeah, the domino effect. Absolutely. Yeah.
And there's still only one actual legal entity with one balance sheet and one set of assets, and yet you've leveraged it five or six times. It's
Yeah.
a worrying state of affairs. I mean, the other big red flag I've been watching in the last 2 weeks, the private credit markets. I don't know if you've been following the stories, but
Yeah,
you've
I have.
effectively got a whole tranche of the global financial market that is currently lending to private entities in these private credit funds. And a lot of the loans are not necessarily what they were labeled as on the tin, you know, the loan recipient.
Does it sound familiar to any other time in history, Henry?
Well, it's a little bit like the mortgage-backed securities, 2008.
History
It,
repeated itself, like as the song
we
goes,
never
mate. Here we
learn.
go again. It's like, have you guys not learned anything at all?
We never learn. And this is rattling around the system. So on the one hand, you've got AI, which is inflating faster than, you know, a blooming bouncy castle at a kid's party. On the other hand, you've got this private credit market, which seems murkier than, you know, the world's murkiest swamp. The financial system, there's a lot of alarm bells ringing, a lot of alarm bells. So now I might have gone down a bit of a rabbit hole with this because the third pinnacle of doom, the third leg of doom on the stool of disaster. Have you been watching liquidity levels with the central banks? There are some
Not, I've not
really
been watching. I've seen a couple of headlines, mate, but yes, it is worrying.
really scary videos going around, and I don't know whether this is complete crackpot stuff with people, you know, downloading graphs from a central bank and drawing incorrect conclusions. But I have watched some videos recently that are talking about the overnight lending rate spiking between banks, currency rates spiking. There are shortages of gold bullion and silver bullion in the London metals market.
Yep.
You know, as the price has gone through the roof, you can't actually get your hands on bullion in bulk anymore. And that's a major, major red flag. So there's all this sort of rattling around in the system. And that's got me, to be honest, thinking more about selling than buying it. I'm in a very bearish sort of defensive mood.
And yet, Henry, yeah, we're recording this on Tuesday the 28th. On Monday the 27th, the S&P, Dow Jones, NASDAQ, the FTSE are all hitting new all-time highs. And then you counter that with, well, there's no fear of recession, despite Amazon's saying we're going to cut 14,000 corporate jobs. I'm struggling to make sense of all the different red flags and then the popping of corks everywhere regarding where the market's at. It seems to be a complete polar
Total disconnect.
opposites of things going on at the minute. I'm going, what, you know, anyway, I suppose we need to just declare what we're going to talk about on this pod to, now. in all of that background, all that noise that we've just created regarding all the
Well,
odds
to
and
me,
evens.
yeah, so my turn for a theme this week. And with all this in mind, with all this drama going on in the world, I have been thinking more about selling than I have about buying. You know, we all spend lots of time thinking about what to buy. There's lots of new shiny shares on the stock exchange that we can go and buy, and there's always new opportunities. But there's not much discussion out there about when to sell what you already own. And yet, selling decisions often define your long-term performance just as much as the buying decisions do. You sell at the right time, you generate a profit. You sell at the wrong time, and that profit's lessened or perhaps even a loss. So I wanted to talk about some of the feelings I'd had around selling, some of the things I've looked at, look at some names that that I've sold recently, but also look at some ideas for, you know, when you've sold, do you just sit cash, or are there other opportunities out there? So that was kind of the area I wanted to kick around on today's podcast.
Go for it.
Well, the first one for me, there's two sides of it. You know, when you've bought a share and you're really excited, you end up suffering from this thing called anchoring bias, right? Yeah. It's sort of like an invisible handcuff. And it's when you fixate on the initial number, the initial price that you bought a share for, and you judge all your future decisions based against that initial price. So the most common thing that you hear from other investors, I'll sell these shares when it gets back to what I paid for it. That, to me, isn't really investing. It's more wishful thinking. It's the gambler standing at the table going, I'll quit after I've had one more go and made my money back. So, you know, I bought shares in Atalia Mine ages ago, and they did very, very well. But they had some drawdowns at the same time. Now, when those drawdowns happened, I wasn't sitting there waiting to get back to break even. I wasn't sitting there going, well, the price has gone down, I'll wait for it to go back to where it was. I was looking at how the company was performing, and I was asking myself, you know, would I buy this company today at the price it's at versus, you know, something else? And if the answer to that question is no, I wouldn't buy it, I struggle these days to justify still holding it. I don't know about you.
It is a difficult one, Henry, and you're spot on regarding that initial purchase price, because we've got to remember the reasons why we purchased the share in the first place. We go back a little step, and sometimes it's because, A, the company's been in the media, or a fund manager's been talking about it, or it's been written up in an article somewhere else, or it's been on socials, right? And usually at that stage, the share price has already moved somewhat, okay? And what we don't know is when the institutions bought in. Yeah. So you've got all the institutions, you've got all the fund managers, they've got their deeper pockets of research more than what you and I have got. Yeah. So all of that's going on. So we're still there waiting and waiting and waiting to hear about, what did you mention? Atalia Mining. Yeah. Maybe the institutions bought in at £1, right? As a nominal figure. Now there's all this noise about the stock. Yeah. And we've gone, ooh, everyone's talking about it, and gold's doing well, or silver's doing well, or whatever products that Atalia do. We're buying at £1.15. So we've normally got, most people, I think, have got a stop loss either in their head or put it in, they plugged it into their system and their platform, and they've gone, I bought it at £1.15. Yeah. Ideally, I want to sell it for £1.50. However, if it gets to £1, I'm out. Yeah. 10 to 15% amount, okay? My thing regarding any stock, right, I might have a stop loss in my head, in the sense of I really don't want it to go to that price. But if it goes to that price, which I really don't want it to go to, I'm looking at what has happened to that stock. What has happened to that company? What have the management said? Yeah. I don't want to lose 15%. I don't want to lose 20%. But if the share price has come down from my purchase price of 115, I'm looking through everything and I'm poring over going, why? Not why me. Why has the price come down to that level?
Yeah.
And if I can't find a good enough reason, yeah, then my consideration really, Henry, is I'm going to hold on to it. Yeah. And in fact, I thought the price was good at 115. Yeah. And now it's at £1. I'm not going to double down, but I might just add some more because the market's gone and done what it's done, had a wobble. This company is saying everything's fine. And I'm hoping they're not lying to us like some other companies have lied to us in the past. So I might just add some more. I would not be selling unless the company's come out and gone, sorry, failed this trading update. Sorry, it's now the cost have gone up. Sorry, our mine's been invaded by somebody else or da-da-da-da-da-da. There's been a collapse in the mine and we're not going to be able to open it again for another 3 months. Those sort of situations will go, yeah, it's down 15%. I don't really want to wait 9 months for this to sort itself out. I'll take the 15%. And I might come back. And when they've resolved it, if it's still there at £1 or just shy of £1, and they say, all go now, we're going back to normal. I might be able to get it at less than 150 and I bought it last time. And then it accelerates because it's behind schedule. So you've got to do your research and have a look at the reasons why, Henry.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that also ties quite neatly into another fear that we all have, which is that fear of missing out when you've made an investment.
Well,
so,
yeah.
You know, let's say the price goes in the opposite direction. Instead of dropping 15%, it shoots up 15%, and then it goes up another 15%, and again and again. Well, now you're up, what, 60% in 4 days? Blimey.
Yep.
You probably missed something here. What if it goes up another 60%?
Yep.
I better get some of this. You know, Peter told me this was a great investment, right? I'm not.
Don't keep
I'm
blaming
not
it on me. Don't keep using me as an example.
Yeah, but that fuels bubbles. So we were just talking about Nvidia. And don't get me wrong, I think Nvidia is a great business, but the valuation is wildly different compared to what it was 6 years ago. Wildly, wildly different. And so are you actually investing in a business that's priced reasonably and has good performance? Or are you now investing in the hopes and dreams of a business that's already done really well in the hopes that it will continue that momentum? I mean, a lot of investors that I speak to, they've held Nvidia and done very well on them. They've held Microsoft and done very well on them. But they seem to have kind of gone into crazy valuation territory, in my opinion. I mean, you just said that there are now four businesses on the American Stock Exchange with a valuation of more than $4 trillion each. And that is just a phenomenal amount of money when you really think about it. And yes, these are businesses that are very, very strong. They've got great moats. Everybody uses Microsoft platforms. They use WhatsApp. They use computers which have got NVIDIA chips in them. They use ChatGPT, which is powered by NVIDIA chips. But they're not the only things in the world. And I was watching a valuation video the other day around data center chips. And part of the problem a lot of these businesses have got, when you buy a data chip and you put it in a data center, you have a certain number of processes which it will be able to complete over its lifetime. And you have to estimate roughly how many processes it's going to complete and roughly how much you think you're going to be able to charge per process for the customer.
Yeah.
So let's say the chip costs you, I don't know, let's keep the math simple. Let's say the chip costs you £100 and you think it's going to be good for 100 computations. Probably won't be a very good chip. But that aside, therefore, you would charge each customer at least £1 per process in order just to break even. If you charge £1.10, you've got a 10% profit. Now, the problem that an awful lot of these data centers have got, it's costing them $10 or $15 per process or per hour to run these chips in electricity costs, in manufacturing costs, in security costs, insurance. They can only charge the end customer $2 or $3 an hour. And that figure's actually dropping over time. The cost of computing is going down. The cost of the chip hasn't gone down at all. The chip still cost $10,000 when you bought it 4 years ago. But your cash flow is falling off a cliff. You've already bought them. So not only is the value of the chip depreciating because it's getting older and therefore it's less valuable relative to newer chips, but the cash flow you're able to generate from it is also falling. Now, that's not an economic model that to me sounds like you should be increasing the price to earnings ratio over time. To me, it sounds like the kind of investment where really these things are getting cheaper, less expensive over time. And yet things like Nvidia and Microsoft are going through the roof. A lot of data center companies are getting valuations through the roof. And you have to ask yourself the question, are you still holding these businesses because the fundamentals justify it and you understand the economics of these investments? Or are you holding it just because you think someone else is going to buy it for more tomorrow? Because they're very, very different things.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
They are very, very different things. You make several valid points there, Henry. At the moment, I'm hearing from a lot of the analysts that are on various sort of platforms and programs across social media on the Bloombergs of the world and CNNs and so on and so forth. And they're saying it's a supply thing. You know, the demand is there, and therefore these companies have to supply. If there'll be a hiccup when the demand slows down, but until now, until then, it's a case of all the other companies that went, now we're not going to get involved in that virtuous circle, are all going, we're being left behind, we have to invest. You know, so you've gone from the billion dollar club down to the $100 billion club, all the way down to the 50 billion, and they're all going, we don't want to be left behind, guys. So they've got to make this investment. They've got to make this investment. So that's what's going on, I think. And, you know, people are saying this is going back to when the internet started, and everybody went, that's just going to be a fad. Don't worry about it. Internet's going to be, it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to change anything. We can still stick to the awesome cart. We don't need to go down e-commerce. We can still deliver stuff, you know, in 2 months down the line, rather than e-commerce, hubs everywhere, next day delivery. So all of those sort of things are happening. And I think the hiccup will be when the demand slows down, or some of these mid-range 100 billion, 200 billion market cap US companies cannot show the profitability, as you've talked about, for their return on investment, if and when that happens. You know what? We've invested 200, 300 million in the past year on this. And someone's sticking up their hand at the AGM and going, okay, so 1 year on, what's been your return on that investment? 2 years on, what's been your return on the investment? Henry Viola's there going, are you planning to invest anymore? Because you've now got 200 million, 200 billion. You've now got debts that you can't actually service without going back to the bank saying, can we change the rates on what we need to pay the debt on? Because you've not made the return on the investment that you thought you were going to get. That's when the house of potential cards could collapse, Henry. But right now, there's more money being pulled from everywhere. And the US government's agenda is to get every other country to pay for this build of infrastructure within America so that they can compete with China and India and everybody else. So it is very, very clever. Because they've got to pay for these tariff knockbacks and the impact somehow.
They need to attract capital. But I mean, these sorts of things, I mean, what we're really talking about here is it's the difference between short-term noise versus actual having an investment thesis, which is a very fancy way of saying having a theory for why you're investing. Yeah, all that effectively means is that you've looked at the business, you've looked at the economic model it's following, you've looked at the macroeconomic environment, how the country's performing, how the world's performing. You've tried to come up with a theory for why you think this investment is going to be worth more in the future than today.
That's with every stock. We've done our research and we've convinced ourselves as to why, you know, forget about Nvidia. You know, we've talked half a dozen times about DJI 9 and S4, you know, just so we could beat ourselves up here. Completely got it wrong.
Yeah.
We looked at that and we convinced ourselves why. It's an investing is very emotional, Henry.
Yeah.
And no one puts enough importance on the psychology of investing. And I've been banging on about this for 10 years now. And it's only now that people are actually getting what I'm trying to say. Because if you get the psychology wrong, all the research in the world is meaningless.
Well, it doesn't help
yeah?
because you mistake actual real damage within the business for something that they can recover from.
Absolutely.
You know,
so to cut a long story short, the rose tinted glasses effect.
Exactly.
You opened up with anchoring. I bought it at that price. I'm not selling until I get more than that
it
price.
It must be worth that. If it was worth
it
that
must be
3 years
worth that
ago.
Because exactly. Things have changed. They've lost that traction and that momentum they've got. There's a reason why the CFO's gone. There's a reason now why the CEO's gone.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time for you to go too and go, and there's that thing about, Henry, that I'm not sure you're going to touch on it, but the loss aversion stuff, that's what keeps us in there. Because that 10%, that 15%, that's my hard blood, sweat and tears that's bought that X amount of stock. I'm not taking the loss. Yeah. And what happens? The company gets delisted. The company's off the market for X amount of years and doesn't ever come back, and you get precisely zero. So rather than taking that 10% loss, you've ended up with the 99% loss.
Well, that's opportunity cost. So again,
Absolutely. This
is an economic concept that, you know, some listeners will have heard of, but, you know, fundamentally, if you take option A, you can't take option B. If you go down the left-hand path on the street, you can't go down the right on the same time. You can only go one way. Opportunity cost is the cost of taking an option. So by doing something, you therefore cannot do something else. If you invest your, let's say you've got £1,000, if you invest your £1,000 in Henry Co., you cannot invest that £1,000 in Peter Co. It's in my company, right? The only way you can invest in Peter Co. is if you sell my investment. Now, holding these poor performance just to get even, you trap your capital. Every holding's got an opportunity cost. If you're going to hold AstraZeneca and it grows 8% a year, you give up holding Nvidia, which grows at 20% a year.
Yeah.
Now, you can't optimize your portfolio to always pick Nvidia at the perfect time and hold it. But there is fundamentally that trade-off you're making. And to me, again, the discipline of selling, it's not really about defeat. People see it as defeat. Oh, I got this wrong. I lost some money. Or I got this wrong. It didn't go up enough. But actually, it's about making a choice to go for the better option. I think that's a healthier way of looking at it.
You've absolutely just nailed it, Henry, right? And this is a Buffettism as well. The reasons why people sell often are all wrong, right? They're forced sellers, often not. The market's beating them down. It's going down. It's going down. It's profit warning. It's a third profit warning. Oh, finally, I've had enough. I'm getting out. Yeah. The market's just hasn't got round to getting that company on the radar. So it's just flatlined for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, not gone anywhere. All the good news. No one's interested. Patience, lost patience with it. I'm out. Right. That's just two of many reasons. Right. The Buffettism one, and the best one for selling, is not about the target price being hit or achieving, you know, 20, 30, 40%. It's if and when, and that's a great reason for selling, actually, 30, 40, 50%. But one of the reasons what we should be using for that stock that's sitting there in our portfolio that's not done so well is actually there's a better stock that's come up that you've researched or got momentum that you like and go, that's now a better option for me to sell. I'm not forcing myself, not forced to sell it, but I'm now going to sell it because I've now identified a better portfolio holding to put in my portfolio instead of this one.
Yeah.
And you've got control over that. Am I taking a loss or am I taking 5% profit or 15% profit? But this is now a better company that I've identified that could actually accelerate far, far quicker than that.
Yeah.
And that's more comfortable because you know what? If we sell that stock I think it's happened to you many, many times, Henry. It certainly happened to me many, many times. And invariably, I will hold that stock and I'm going, not selling, not selling, not selling, not selling. And then I'm forced to sell it. And I declare it to the rest of the people on social media. And bizarrely, a day later, a week later, what do I see? Share price is going up. So that's another reason that we're going, I'm not selling, because I know when I sell it, the last four times I've done that, the share price has gone up. So I'm not selling. And the share price carries on going down. And the minute you go, oh, I've had enough, and sell it, share price goes on up. Or there's a takeover at a premium. But that's the markets. We have to celebrate the good, the bad, the indifferent, and just have a look at the portfolio and say to ourselves, how has that portfolio done for Henry Co and Peter Co over the last 12 months versus the previous 12 months? And if overall, despite our individual losses of stocks, if our overall portfolio has been successfully growing and compounding at 5%, 7%, or 10%, that's good enough. Get rich slowly. You're not competing against that person that's coming out saying, year to date, after 4 months, I'm up 35, 45, 50%. You're not competing against them. Anyway, I've had a rant,
Spot
sorry.
on. No, not at all. I mean, and this, and again, you'll notice I've got a nice path we're going down here, because this then leads me on to talking about selling. Global perspectives, the US, right? You've got these businesses worth trillions of dollars. You've got the circular AI issues, you've got the private credit issues. Now, the US market has just been a phenomenal performer over the last decade. It's been unbelievable. It does nothing but go up and to the right. While the S&P 500, it goes up and to the right, you're rich. 20%, 30%, 40% year after year. Just buy some more. Buy some more, and it'll be worth more next year. If you bought the Nasdaq, it's done even better. You know, this is the tech heavy index in the US. This has got the companies of tomorrow, the ones that are going to get us to Mars, the SpaceXs. It's got the fiber optic cable, fiber companies. It's got AI businesses in it. It's got robotics businesses in it. You know, so when the, do you remember when we were talking about Rentokil and I mentioned AI rat catchers? They're going to deploy the Terminator to catch the rats. Well, there's somebody in the Nasdaq that'll be building that right now. I guarantee it, ladies and gents. So, you buy this stuff and it's done terrifically well. But concentration risk is growing in these indices. You know, seven companies make up over 30% of the S&P 500. So there are supposedly, when you buy the S&P 500, you're buying 500 different businesses. Not supposedly, you are. Problem is that actually 30% of your investment is in just seven of those. Everybody is buying the S&P 500. I'm buying the S&P 500. Pension funds are buying the S&P 500. The government's buying the S&P 500. Everybody, for as long as I can remember, has just bought the S&P 500. Biggest American companies in the world, right? Just go get it and forget about it. But when everybody crowds into that same trend, what do you think happens? Because the margin for safety sort of disappears. What do you do? The only way you can realize the value of the S&P 500, the $4 trillion that are in these handful of companies, 16 trillion, whatever it is. Well, you need somebody to buy them, don't you? So if everybody's already in the S&P 500, and then the pension funds need to realize their positions in the S&P 500 because demographics are changing, who are they going to sell it to exactly? Because we all already own the S&P 500. So then you've got an awful lot of sellers and not a lot of buyers, because there's no buying power left. Like, now maybe this is me. Maybe somebody will tell me, Henry, you're an idiot. There's so much buying power out there, you don't need to worry about it. But the longer this US bull run goes on at 30% a year, the more I go, well, I'm starting to get a little bit twitchy. I'm starting to want to look elsewhere in the world other than the S&P 500. What about you?
I tend not to look at the S&P 500, Henry, and I think I've probably had this home bias which has cost me for several years. But I'm quite happy, happier being in what is I still view as an undervalued market. than chasing a richly valued market, and richly va overly richly valued stocks. And it's not that I want to be Joe Average. I want my portfolio to exceed and do well. And I try and navigate that by the levels of research that I do. But my fear has always been that by buying something that's overly richly valued, that would temper my returns. And having read enough of that, I've read, I think in part, and you answered this earlier, your portfolio, your portfolio is my portfolio success. Sometimes is achieved by making less mistakes. It's not necessarily about every single stock you've bought is a winner. Yeah, because the drawdown that we have from the losses, 25%, 35%, is far more significant to overcome than it is for when the same stock rises 35%. Yeah, or 25%. So that psychology, it messes with you when you see everyone else is going, I've been buying that stock in the US, that's up 100%, that's up 125%, and so on and so forth. You've got to measure your own risk. And this is the psychology about it all. Oh, that FOMO you touched on, Henry, is that everyone's looking over there going, well, everyone else is buying that over there. Yeah, everyone else is buying that over there. And you're taking a greater and greater risk to the point where you're actually gambling on there being the greater fool theory that someone else is going to pay. You know, I don't know what the PE is for some of these stocks anymore. No one even talks about the PEs of some of them anymore, do they? You know, because they're so richly valued. So you've got to ensure yourself that you've got that going back to my way of investing, that margin of safety, that if everything goes to pop tomorrow, that company is still worth a pound. I bought it at 70 pence. It went to 150. I should have sold it out. But the margin of safety is that if they had to start from scratch tomorrow, it's still worth a pound. Now, you've got Nvidia. They're talking about going to $200 a share, right? Which will take it to being worth more than 5 billion a share, more than 5 billion for the whole company. Now, at some point, 5 trillion, sorry, 5 trillion. At some point or other, as you've said, someone's going to say about that valuation, where's the profits coming from? What is the profits? And they can keep banging out the profits, but it gets to a point where someone's going to have to go, who's going to be the first person brave enough to put a sell marker on it to say, I you know, I think this is now overvalued. If profitability is sustained and they can show it, then it'll carry on, Henry. You know, but at some point or other, you've got to watch it. And going back to what you were saying about the selling bit and the exiting bit, the things you've got to look at is fear, that pride issue of not wanting to avoid admitting defeat. You touched on, mentioned loss aversion, and you've got a confirmation bias, right, that prevents you from thinking objectively. Yeah. And then it's the ego, because we all want to be proven right, you know. And Nvidia keeps going up. It's like the crypto guys and the Bitcoin guys. It's like Bitcoin always goes up, you know. And if you'd bought it 5 years ago or 10 years ago, you'd be up a zillion percent. If you bought Nvidia, a zillion percent. No one talks about the massive drawdowns in the middle and whether or not they would have held on to it during that time. And you and I know, the vast majority of people that we know quite a few people in the investment sphere. A 5%, 15%, 20% drawdown on most stocks, they're out. So the question should be,
at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, I mean, and I'm sure there'll be people pop out of the woodwork and tell me I don't know what I'm talking about here, but I'm going to say it anyway. Do you remember NFTs, non-fungible tokens?
We spoke about this a couple of pods ago, yeah.
Yeah. Right,
$60 million, $100 million, now worth
some lunatic comes out and he creates digital images, yep. Not real artwork, like just digital images of really stupid things, like a monkey in a baseball cap, or a dog with a bottle of beer, or a frog. Like, and then they say, right, well, that picture, if you want to own that digital picture, that's $100,000, Peter. And because, I don't know, maybe you're as high as a kite or you're drunk as a skunk, you go, yeah, sure, I'll give you $100,000 for that picture of a, monkey in a baseball cap. And then what do you do with it? Can't stop me selling another one. You can't stop me from copying it. You also can't find anybody else to buy it. And there was an expose that was done. It was either by Financial Times or Bloomberg or The Guardian, someone, that showed that 99% of these portfolios of these NFTs, what they called portfolios, basically collections of digital pictures, were worthless. They had zero value. People had put hundreds of thousands of dollars into them and they'd gone to zero. Now, explain the difference between that and Bitcoin for me. Other than the fact that Bitcoin's not gone to zero.
I think the difference with Bitcoin and me, I'm going to be very, very short with this one, is the fact that they are now being recognized by some governments as an asset that can be utilized for transactions.
Is true.
That's what's going on
That
now.
is true.
It's been endorsed by quite a few different
But
countries now.
the only parallel I can give you on that, tulips were recognized by all sorts of
That
financial
was a
institutions.
few hundred years on from tulips, but yeah, it's a fair point. It's a fair point. It's a fair point,
You
Henry.
know, and this is why the madness of crowds is called the madness of crowds. The crowd has gone mad. They've gone mad. You know, the lunatics are in charge of the asylum. The government's decided that Bitcoin is an asset. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm the dinosaur. I am the one wearing braces on a Tuesday night, but.
Yeah, that's where we are, mate. That's where we are. Right. So I'm gonna mention on that note what you've just said there about tulips and Bitcoin and NFTs. Warren Buffett approach, Henry. Be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. Yeah. So if you were the ones that were getting in early on Bitcoin, you're the ones that were getting in Nvidia early. You have to be mindful when other people are, spouting that it's gonna go to I think it's Draper is called a Bitcoin specialist who's saying that it's going to go to $1 million per coin. And so on and so forth. And that's the talk. So you've got to be mindful. So yeah. Let me talk about some positive news for one of for some of our shareholders. Some of our listeners, shareholders in a small or we'll probably call it a mid cap company now, because it's heading towards 2 billion market cap, if not 1.5 billion. You must have seen the news yesterday, Henry, regarding one of our little companies. Yeah, a certain company that's been talked about probably for the past 6 years on our sort of network that we're in. Do you know which one I'm talking about? It's got a suitable name. It's
Don't
called
shoot.
Goodwin.
Oh, yes. Go on,
Yes,
shoot.
Goodwin. Ticker symbol GDWN. And yesterday they came out with some news, Henry. Everyone already knows about it, so I'm not going to go into greater detail. But basically, the trading update saying profits before tax in the year to April 26 are expected to be, wait for it, 100% higher year on year. Yeah. And additional to that, they'll be declaring a special dividend of £5.32 per share on top of the £1.40 they'd already declared. So what happened yesterday? The shares went up 32% on that news. And at the last count, when I looked earlier today, it was up another 10/11%. So yesterday, sorry, Friday of last week, the shares had closed, where was it? 154 and a half. Today, it closed at 219 per share. And the 52-week low was £55.40. Now you'll remember, I forget the number of the podcast. We had a guest on here. I don't remember the date, but not the number of the podcast. It was Simon Brilliant Leader that
Oh,
came on as a
yes.
guest on this podcast. And he was talking, waxing lyrical about Goodwin being a very, very good company. It's a UK company, it does what it does. Really good management team, all the rest of it. At that time in December 2022, the shares were sub £32 per share. Today, they hit 244 before they bit of selling triggered some people. From 244, it closed at 219. But that is a significant sevenfold move and more since then, excluding dividends, by the way. Yeah. So I just wanted to thank Simon for coming on and sharing that with some of our listeners back then. I'm hoping some of you bought it and did your own research for Goodwin. And it looks like, you know, there's more to come with Goodwin. But you might want to just hold that thought regarding buying it at 244 or more, and just wait and see where it settles at, because it's done. What's that? Threefold, nearly fourfold already from its lows, recent lows, in the stock. But it looks like it's actually absolutely on fire. And I will add to that that one of our brilliant listeners, or may even be a couple of our brilliant listeners, have made a donation to Memphis as a consequence of their stellar wins on Goodwin. We had where is his, I've got his name here. We had Roger Green yesterday, and he said in a post on X, if the market has been kind to you, please consider sharing the love with a good cause. One such good example is this. And that was a post that I put out regarding Memphis. So Roger had made a donation of £100 plus gift aid. And on the Memphis gift, just giving page, he said, thank you for the consistency of the Twin Peaks podcast and all the work that you put into them. Keep on podding. And I think that might have triggered another listener, another two listeners that were Goodwin investors. Trader Mark, top workers always, chaps. We'll get a Guinness or three in some point. I think that's more directed at you, Henry. So we will have to meet up with Trader Mark at some point. And also Pat, whose handle is pronounced Patchy, at Pat XI at Patchy at 68. I'm very pleased to be able to support this magnificent charity again. They do amazing work supporting young people and helping them to reach their maximum potential. So that was £40 and £10 gift aid. And Trader Mark gave us £12 and £50 gift aid. And then prior to that, we'd also had Grayling at Tench Blank. I think you interact with him quite a lot on X, Henry. And he also made a donation, and he said, dear Peter and Henry, I really appreciate all the effort that you both put into the podcast. Love how you explain your successes with stock picking, but just as importantly, the mistakes that you've made. Yeah, we made loads of them, mate. And that was £30 and plus gift aid. So we're actually sitting at the moment at £4,042. We've hit the 80% target mark. We've got 6 weeks or so to go before we end up in 2026. So if any of you are the Goodwin winners, wish to make a donation to Memphis, then please consider doing so at the Just Giving page, which is www.justgiving / Twin Peaks Investing. And you can find that on the YouTube page and everywhere else on X to make a donation. What else you got, Henry?
Well, that does actually remind me. I owe an apology to Terry Vaughan,
Okay, go for it.
who wrote to me nearly. It must be at least a week ago now. Unfortunately, Terry, I must apologize on air. I'm usually much better at replying to emails I get. I've been a little bit under the weather after I came back off holiday. I did see your email and I've been terribly rude and not replied. I will send you a response, but thank you very much to writing, very much for writing in. And apologies to anybody else that's been trying to get hold of me. I think it is just Terry I've missed, but as I say, I've been a little bit under the weather the last 2 weeks and had rather a lot on at the office. So, yes, unfortunate. But thank you as well to everybody that is donated. I think that's spectacular, Peter, that we've hit the 80% mark.
Absolutely, we've done phenomenally well. I'll give you the Just Giving page again: www.justgiving.com justgiving.com/page/Peter Higgins, and you should find us on there. Now, I mentioned to you, Henry, that given all the shenanigans that was going on in the market, that I was going to share a stock with you, but I wanted you to talk about one that you mentioned to me that I've never ever heard of first, if you'd be so bold. And I think you're going to have people going, uh-oh, Henry's got his travel bag on again, and he's got his suitcase out, because this is quite a global one you found, mate. So I'll let you go first with
Yes.
it, please.
So, in the spirit of watching out for overheated US markets, I took a trip over to the continent and had a look at a Swiss business. The ticker is Beanz, BEANZ. It is a Swiss business called Belimo Holdings, who are engaged in the development, production, and sale of energy efficient heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. The core business creates dampeners, control valves, sensors and meters, valve actuators, globe valves, throttle valves, duct sensors. And along with their subsidiaries, they operate across Europe, America, Asia Pacific, and Africa. Now, the business is absolutely vast. It is a 10 billion Swiss franc business.
Wow.
Forecast to grow its turnover 17% next year and grow its earnings per share 23% next year. But what really caught my eye was its return on capital employed, 31%. Now, in a world where lots of people are talking about quality shares, Microsoft, Nvidia, ASML, as though the technology sector is the only sector in the world that can generate good returns. 30% return on capital employed for a building materials business, I think this is absolutely spectacular.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPETES. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the TWINPETES promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Now, the business has had quite a good run. It was up 30% last year. It's up 40% year to date. And it's on a fairly chunky forward PE of 55 times. But the three-year average is 50 times. This is quite a highly rated company. And I suspect that is partly due to its strengthening return on capital employed. Three-year average of 27%, it's now up at 31%. And so as that return on capital has strengthened, the PE ratio, which investors are willing to pay, has also increased. Now, the business has also got a fairly consistent return on capital. So it's never had a negative return on. And it's one of those companies that I think is going to come in for increasing demand as temperatures heat up. So I don't know about you up in Leicestershire, but here in London, the last summer we just had was absolutely scorching, red hot. And I spent most of the summer, when I couldn't get out, sitting on the tube thinking, oh my gosh, I would love some air conditioning. This business produces air conditioning units and air treatment units. And I think in Europe, there is going to be an increasing demand for this sort of technology as temperatures continue to increase over the next 10 years.
Henry, never heard of it. Sounds like a brilliant company. That return on capital number, And the fact it's increasing and getting better and better means that it's becoming a more efficient company by the sounds of it. They must be doing something right. I'm intrigued by it. I would need to go away and do some research on it. That would probably be the first ever Swiss stock I've ever actually looked at buying. Can I ask you one question regarding it all?
Course.
The CEO, do you know who that person is? And are they Swiss? There's a reason why I'm asking this.
The CEO is, I've got it here somewhere. Just
The reason
pull.
why I'm asking, Henry, is because what you will notice is the quality of the management. So the Swiss are always very, very particular about who manages their companies, and which is what everyone should be. But there'll also be the fact that that person has been in been at a ten at a tenure that's held enabled them to nurture and build a culture within that particular company. Yeah, so that's the reason why I'm asking. You don't need to say who it is and how long, but that would be something that would really get me involved to see how long they've actually nurtured that, because the fact they're getting more and more efficient, Henry. And you know what, Henry? To counter what you've said throughout this pod, they could be using more AI. They might have made an investment.
Yeah.
And they're showing the profits that's coming their way regarding their investments in various different bits of AI. But
Yeah.
I'm just throwing that at you because of what you've been saying for a little while on this pod. But who knows, mate? Sounds an absolutely cracking company. And you know what? If they even mention that part of the infrastructure, energy, ventilation, they're going into cooling data centers or ventilating the data centers, whoosh, off they go again, mate.
Really
That
take
share
off.
price could significant, unless that's what they've said already, and that's why the share price is moving up. But I'll be doing some digging on that one, mate. I've never heard of it before,
Yep.
because all the other cooling companies that are involved in the AI centers in America have just gone off 100, 200, 300% in the past year and a half.
They
So that's
will.
a really, 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 really good find, mate. Right. I'm going to bring us back home, Henry. And the reason why I'm intrigued by this company, I was intrigued about it before, was the investor summit, that we had in August in London. And we had a fantastic closing keynote speaker, whose name I can recall now. That's an in-joke between me, Henry, and others that were there, of Charles Hall. And he works for a company that is really deep into the ecosystem of the UK investment market and industry. And that company is called Peel Hunt. It's got a market cap of 129 million. The 52-week range is 70 pence, 218 pence. And today it closed at £1.05. Founded not so long, Henry. Let's have a look at the date of this. I think this company is just barely older than you, Henry. Yeah? This company was founded in 1989. What year were you born?
52.
92. I thought so. You pup. Founded in 1989 in London by a gentleman by the name of Charlie Peel and Christopher Holdsworth Hunt, hence the name Peel Hunt. And there's been through quite a few acquisitions since then, and so on and so forth, and buying out of staff from different companies and all the rest of it. But it's grown since then from two individuals doing what they were doing to establish international offices in New York, Copenhagen, and elsewhere. What do they do? They operate in across three main business areas, providing joined up approach to investment banking, research distribution, execution of services, and so on and so on and so forth. And they're involved all over regarding raising of monies, including M&A transactions and IPO fundraising. And the reason why I like this and I'm looking at it, Henry, is because I'm seeing and hearing mutings of once this budget of 2025 is over with in the next couple of weeks, and we see what's happened. If it's not one of them, uh-oh, sort of moments, which everyone's just saying so many, oh, this is happening, that's happening. What they don't realize, I'm going off track here for a minute, is that all of the stuff that's in the press and all the concerns that everyone's raising are all just testers that are coming out there. And they're all, it's like everything's been fed to the media. We're going to do this, we're going to do that, we might do this one. And once the reaction is, no, don't you ever do that, da, 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 it's then gets tempered and watered down. Or so I'm hoping the worst case scenario is that everyone said that's going to happen regarding the markets, you know, ISAs, taxes, you name it, does not happen with Rachel Reeves's budget. And then the market can carry on going higher. Anyway, point I'm trying to make is, Henry, if we get a muted response, which is oh, relief that it's not the worst case R&R that we get Rachel Reeves' budget. See what I did there, R&R. Then there'll be more IPOs going into 2026. The spring of 2026, more IPOs, buoyant market. Everyone's going, thank heavens for that. That monies that can be released into the market from all those people in the UK that are sitting on cash. Peel Hunt could be a benefactor
They need
regarding.
some big ones. That's the problem they've got. And I think it was Peel Hunt that released a trading update a couple of weeks ago that said that they'd seen an uptick in M&A activity.
Yes, they did. Are we going to touch on the trading update? You want me to touch on the trading update,
There you
Henry?
go. No, go
Yeah.
for it.
I will go to the trading update. It says here, mate, half year performance for 6 months. Group revenue reported was 53.8. Peel Hunt achieved group revenue of 53.8, providing a baseline before subsequent 37%. They're expecting a 37% increase in the half year for full year 26 for 1 year from now. They're expecting a 37% increase. Additionally, Henry, they were saying, yeah, continue to build its corporate client base, focusing on mid-cap and growth companies. And they'd grown that by 78% since the IPO, 350 to FTSE 350 client base. And indications are that the foundations for client expansion revenue growth is in track, on track. Yeah. So they're expecting more M&A, which they're involved in, and they're expecting more IPOs. So they're very positive about their outlook, Henry. And what's it say here? Emphasize sustainable, like you like that word, sustainable profitability, client service, and select cost management. And those initiatives will make them, again, Henry, more efficient, mate. Yeah. So it's a little company than I normally talk about. I think that could do well in 2026, Henry, as a stock to consider. Do you have a look at, have you looked, are you on ShareScope there, mate? SharePad, are you on there? Have you got anything that you want to look at? Any metrics that you don't
I
like?
really, really like. So I forget who it was. Somebody wrote, probably not even 6 months ago, about Peel Hunt because I
Okay.
put out something saying it's a company I've always wanted to like. I don't own it,
Right.
I'm not planning on owning it, but I've always been a bit wary. And they said, oh, they've just bought some. What, you know, could I expand a little? And what I went on to say was, I love the culture of the business. I love their research that they publish. I think Charles Hall is fantastic. I could just sit and listen to Charles
He's
Hall
very good.
on
Yeah, agreed.
broadcast. He's great. My problem with Peel Hunt is they're loss making. And when I look at that as a business, it's been going 30 years. It shouldn't be loss making. It's a professional services business. How are they not able to turn a profit? I mean, I'm not saying that the city environment is doing terrifically well or that the London market's doing terrifically well. There's all kinds of excuses I can give, but still, at the end of the day, not making money and they make losses fairly often. And that's why I've always gone, I want to buy some, but I'm going to wait till they make a profit. And I'm still sat here waiting.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Henry. The difficulty you've got, and we've talked about those 20 billion market cap companies in the US that have got no revenue. You're now you've always been concerned about profitability. When you wait until it becomes profitable, the share price will be 20%,
It's
30%
already
higher.
gone. Yeah. But
It's already gone.
I think this is a psychological thing for me. I'd be more comfortable buying it, even 20% higher, knowing it's
And
now profitable.
there's nothing wrong with that. That's your
Yeah.
you've got to address your own risk profile and psychology and mindset. Stick to your mindset, stick to your strategy. It's working for you. Refine it. You don't have to start going, you know what, sod it. As we said, don't go to FOMO. Don't start
Yeah.
chasing, you know, rainbows just because everyone else is chasing rainbows.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the TLC song is Don't go chasing waterfalls. That's the musical people understand that one. Right. The last one I've got for you, Henry, and we're going back to your tech start here about all the other companies that are doing this virtuous circle of investments. And this is the counter one for me that I think that people will go, nah, I think Pete's way off the mark here. Very contrarian pick this one. Okay. Companies called Gattaca. Yeah. Gattaca. And essentially, this is, I'm going to call this, without being rude, a recruitment firm. Okay. The last purchase they made has been sorted out, and it was an InfoSec company. So they're into the cybersecurity space. But in summary, Gattaca basically have got a global business that specializes in STEM. So all these technology individuals that are needed to work and service and learn and make all these efficiencies for all of these OpenAI chat, Microsoft, Amazon, tech, blah, 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 technologists. They're essentially technologists going to these firms. Until AI can get to where it needs to get to, somebody needs to be trained to actually deliver and put together some of these programs. AI can't just do it itself yet. Needs an expert to actually put it together. So I'm going to be short and sweet on this one, Henry, but I'm thinking that this could be, whether it be next year or whatever, an interesting company to purchase. Its share price is currently 96 and a half pence. The range, 52-week range, is 68 and a half to 104, so it's near the top of the range. PE of 16, a yield of 3%, market cap, tiny market cap, Henry. This is proper tiny, this one, of 30 million. Yeah. So human resources company specializing in contract and permanent recruitment processes, operates internationally, United Kingdom, Europe, Middle East, Africa, the Americas, and Asian Pacific. Based HQ in Hampshire in the UK. And what else we got here? I think I had something on the cash. I think I had something on the cash. I got about half of the business is in cash, Henry. So I wanted to just share that with you because I know you're gonna like you prefer it to have some cash on the balance sheet. I think it's
Yeah,
got
they've got 17
15.
million in cash.
Yeah, I did have it down somewhere.
Yeah, closing cash balance as of end of July, according to ShareScope, anyway, 17 million.
Yeah, so that's so just about half, over half, in
That's a
cash,
lot of cash for a business of
and you
that
know what?
size.
Exactly, and you've got the update here, profit before tax, Henry, went up 53% year on year. Profit after tax went up 138%. It's a tiny little revenue still, but it's making profits, and if all this infrastructure spend that's meant to be happening globally leads to them dealing and having to have more individuals that are hired part-time, permanently, contract-wise, just a tiny little tiddler could do well, I think. Could be proven wrong, but 30 million market caps, 15 to 17 million cash in a technology space where they can get hires done. Just one to watch, guys, ladies and gents. I haven't purchased it yet, but I've got my eye on it. I've also got my eye on Peel Hunt. I don't own it yet. Those are my two little, I'm going to say tiddlers, two little tiddlers, two little conkers to grow into a fine oak.
I like it. I like it. I have only got one more name for our listeners, which I'm
Go
going
for
to
it, mate.
throw in. And it's in the interests of diversifying away from the US again.
Okay.
And this is, it's actually an investment trust, which I don't talk about very often. It is Invesco Asia Dragon Trust. The ticker is IAD. It's got a
Dragon.
relatively low expense ratio, less than 1%. It's 0.7%, which I like. So I don't like paying my investment managers too much. Now, they invest shareholder funds to seek out sustainable and long-term returns for shareholders. primarily in the Asian and Australasian markets. They invest in food, beverage and tobacco, real estate, banks, automobile and components, capital goods, insurance, technology, hardware and equipment, utilities and other sectors. And the reason this one caught my eye, not only does it diversify you out of the US and out of the UK, which, let's face it, most of us probably are quite heavily overweight. This gives you access to some really interesting global names. So their biggest holding is actually an 11% holding in the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, which is TSMC. You've probably heard the acronym more than you've heard the full name. These guys manufacture a significant percentage of the semiconductors used in technology around the world. Huge global player. They've got holdings in Alibaba Group. They've got a 5% holding, a 4% holding in Samsung Electronics. They've got a holding in HDFC Bank, which is a development bank, and also Tencent Holdings, which is a Chinese business. Now, this area of the world doesn't come without its risks. I've just mentioned a Chinese holding. Maybe people are uncomfortable with investing in China right now because of the geopolitical situation. But to me, this is a good, good business that's grown its net asset value at 13% a year over the last 10 years, and it pays out nearly 4% in dividends. I think this is a really nice fund to go and have a look at to diversify into the Asian markets. It's got some interesting holdings. It seems to be fairly well run. It might be a consideration for people that are looking to take some profits, perhaps from the US, and deploy into another region where expectations are a little bit lower and dividends are a little bit higher. You know, wealth really is not built just by chasing growth, but it's by finding value where other people aren't looking. Like you were saying, Peter, when people are greedy, be fearful. People are fearful, be greedy.
Good call, Henry. Good call. One thing I need to ask you, is it sitting at a discount to NAV? Or
that's a good question.
What is the discount to NAV? Is there such thing? Or is it sitting at a premium? Given that you've talked about those high quality Chinese names there, they're not going for the small caps, are they? They're going for significant large caps, mate.
Well, it's currently sat at nearly a 9% discount to NAV.
9% discount on a 10% with a 4% dividend yield.
Yeah, and it's predominantly large cap companies.
So yeah,
it's
it
not
is.
Got
tiny
little tidbits. The forecast PE is not too bad. As a basket, it's showing about 14%, which isn't overly expensive, especially when you consider the US companies are at 30, 40, 50 times. It's not the only name in the sector. The only name in the region. But it's a good, high quality that's performed well over a significant period of time. So I think it's one that's worth going. Maybe go and have a look at their website. Watch some of the investment manager interviews. Go and find out what their thinking is, what their strategy is. Get a feel for how the managers are performing over time and what they're doing before you put some money in. But there's plenty of material out there. The Association of Investment Companies is another good research tool to go and find some information out. Go and have a look. Yeah.
Good call, Lenny. I've dug something out here, and it was saying basically back at earlier part of 2025, the current company as it is was formed from the merger between Invesco Asia Trust and Asia Dragon Trust. So you've got a collective there now. So that may, put two together, make them stronger. Maybe they're looking at a much deeper, wider market now as well. Those fund managers that are collectively looking at that. So, strengthened by merging maybe. And looks good. Looks good. Looks a consistent performer. And, that's what you want with investment trusts, isn't it? You want a consistency. Or performance, if you choose them well enough, you end up having to be able to sleep well at night. I do like that one, Henry. And I do like the idea, as you said there really, really well, is to diversify away from some of the heat of the hot markets of the US. Yeah, like that.
Good.
Just gone ex-divi on that one, Henry. Dividend's going to be paid or just been paid on the 24th as well. So dividend paying 4% yield. Like that. Good call. So at least it's listed in the US, UK, sorry. Despite you going to to Switzerland for the last one. Yeah.
Exactly.
A Asia, but based in the UK. I like that. And you said the ticker symbol is IAD. Yeah.
IAD, yeah.
Yeah. So be able to find that. So, yes, ladies and gents, go and have a little look on there. Have a look at some of the interviews that have been done with the fund managers and check out the AIC website for some additional details. Other good websites are available to research, including the ShareScope website. So have a look at all what's going on regarding that particular company. Right, Henry, I think that's it.
I
We've done
think
a good
that is
hour and
it.
hour plus. You've been magnificent as always. Thank you ever so much for sharing those stocks and for doing part two of the investing psychology pod. Essentially, is what we've done today, and we're giving you some ideas. If you've enjoyed this, like the others have, please reshare it on X or when you see it on LinkedIn, and leave us a comment on YouTube. Like, subscribe on the platforms. And let us know what your thoughts are. And as I said earlier, if you have been fortunate enough to have been given a, I think a near 50% return on Goodwin and looking forward to a £5 special dividend, and you'd like to make a little donation to get us to the £5,000 target for Memphis, please, please, please leave us a donation to help some young people get enough training so they can get gainful employment and be independent, living independently in the community. Right. Thank you ever so much, Henry. Sir, I will see you
Pleasure.
soon. We have some celebrations to be had, which I think when it goes official, we can actually declare it on here, or when you've done it on LinkedIn, we'll share the news. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, I think so.
Because those on YouTube are wondering, right, why Henry's got his suspenders on, braces in the UK, and been grinning like a Cheshire cat throughout this pod. He has some news to share, which he'll be sharing soon. All right, Henry, is that it? I've not overstepped the mark, have I?
That
I've not
is it,
overstepped the
Peter.
mark.
Not at
No,
all.
good, 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 good. No. Right. Okie dokie, sir. Thank you ever so much. Have a great weekend. And I will hopefully chat to you tomorrow. We've recorded this on the Tuesday. I'm hoping to get it on Friday. I've got loads of stuff going on tomorrow. So has Henry. So if you've enjoyed this, please let us know. And we'll see you. It's going to be November. Yeah. It'll be even darker than it is now, mate.
Spooky
Yeah.
season.
Clocks going forward and all that jazz. Right, Henry. So take care. Ladies and gents, God bless you all. See you soon. Bye for now.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.